Hello, thank you very much for coming. I'm Dina Schottenkirk, founder of TalkPopsy, and please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Malka Simon. I am faculty at Brooklyn College. I'm a lecturer in the art department.
Wonderful. All right, so what we've done here is sort of revisited the censorship project, right? Mm-hmm. Because of all of the difficulties that happened across campuses over in America. We had a couple lawyers here on Friday that were wonderful, from the ACLU and one from Columbia University's Knight Foundation for First Amendment. And they sort of framed the problem a little differently, and I'll sort of share with you kind of how they thought about it. So they sort of had two pots, and one was, this is free speech and speech issues just legally, right? And what the First Amendment is. But then they talked a lot about sort of the social pot and how you have to have this sort of social empathy and respect for one another and tolerance of one another in order to have a vibrant legal protection.
Yeah.
And so they were kind of a little bit concerned with both.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, it's sort of reflecting on it, I don't know if you feel the same way, Malka, but, you know, we're the most diverse campus in America. And I think we're relatively good about listening to one another and respect. Well, let me take that back. I think we're relatively good about not having conflicts with one another. I'm not so sure if that's the same thing as listening to one another.
I think that's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think... For me, I realize more and more that I can really only speak as faculty because I don't really know how students feel. And sometimes I talk to students or I hear, you know, I have friends who send their kids here and, oh, my kid feels this way, my kid feels that way. And it's like very different from my experience.
Like in what way? What do you mean?
You know, I actually just saw... I ran into a family member yesterday, and he said, I know someone who's, he teaches at another institution, and he says, I have two students in my class now, and they transferred out of Brooklyn College because they felt very attacked by, like the Palestinian demonstrations, and they don't feel safe at Brooklyn College, and they left. And I thought...
And they're Orthodox?
I assume so. I think so, yeah. You know, but I'm Orthodox, and I see these demonstrations, and I don't feel particularly threatened. But obviously, my position as a faculty member is very different.
Right.
So it's
right.
just very interesting to me how, like, I think there's really quite a gulf.
That's probably true. We don't always know what's going on.
Yeah.
In their heads, right?
Right. But I also. What did you say? We're good at having conversations with each other, or we're good at listening?
I think we're good at avoiding conflict.
Yes, because there's never a conflict in my class. Not that I teach anything. I don't teach politics.
Yeah.
But, you know, we touch on things inevitably, and there's never a conflict in my classroom.
Yeah, I've never seen conflicts. I've only seen one. I saw one conflict here in the fall, and it ended up being physical. Of course, how Brooklyn, right? Of course it got physical, right?
But that wasn't in a classroom.
It was not in a classroom. It was in a hallway.
Okay.
It was in a hallway.
But students come together in very close proximity in classrooms.
Very close proximity. Yeah.
But I have personally never witnessed, like, a fight. Sometimes tempers flare.
Yeah.
But even that, it's usually pretty... And again, my subject matter, I teach art, I teach architecture. It's not...
Although...
We definitely touch on things that can be sensitive, 100%.
Yeah.
But it's very different than people who teach about, like, the Mideast conflict. Like, that's not the heart of my class.
Right, but we don't even... I haven't heard of any serious conflicts even in those. Yeah.
No, I haven't either.
I think we've been reasonably good, right? At avoiding conflict.
At avoiding conflict,
which is not the same thing as being good at listening to one another.
This is true.
Right?
Yes.
So... This is what I've been thinking about. It's like, I wonder how much each side is listening to the other side.
I don't think there's a lot of listening happening.
I don't think there's a lot of listening either.
I think there's a lot of screaming.
Less screaming.
I think there is a lot. I mean, I think, maybe not literal screaming, but there's a lot of posturing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how much listening there
is. Posturing is probably about the right word. Yeah. people sort of demonstrate what side they're on in all sorts of subtle ways, right?
Right, and like a lot of defensiveness, you know?
A lot of defensiveness.
Yeah, I think for sure by students. But faculty also.
I was going to say the same thing. Yeah. Do you have any ideas? Like, I've been thinking, this is like, you know, do you ever have these thoughts that you hear them going on in the back of your head and you know that they're building momentum and at some point you're going to have to sort of confront them and actually work on accomplishing them? So I hear in the back of my head this game development idea of a listening game.
Okay.
And I'm thinking about it both in person, devising a listening game, and as a video game. I have no ability about how to do a video game. But you know how in video games, a lot of times, there are like three different options you have about what you're going to say to the other person or what you heard the other person saying,
right?
So I think that probably sort of happens in our head, that somebody says something to us and we have several different options about how to interpret that.
I have someone for you to talk to about that.
Really?
I do.
Good.
Okay. I feel like I'm always using her name lately, but I'm very impressed by her since I met her. Devorah Kletnik in CIS, in Computer Information Science. She teaches game-based. She does a lot of game-based learning. So she does teach code, and she has her students designing games. And a lot of... She also, like, teaches through games. And, in fact, there's an entire CUNY Games conference.
Oh, my God. This is
like,
what we need. Yeah.
Could, you know, if she's... I don't know what her schedule's like, so I don't, like...
But I think that's what we need.
Times.
We need, like... But
there
we need
are
in
people...
Person, we need in-person games, too.
Yeah, no, but she does in-person games.
Good.
And she's giving a workshop in March if you want to go.
Great.
No, but she's really great. She's really wonderful, and she talks about how to play games in the classroom to get students to learn. And, she's also, she can code, so she teaches coding.
Good. So, because I think that what we need to do is to get students on both sides of the fence sort of sitting across from each other and then playing some kind of listening game. So there's some real, although there was just somebody here in the tent, he was an actor and he was super good. And he talked about, and he made a really good point about how much easier it is to absorb a different point of view when you're an audience member, just sort of seeing it played out in front of you, than you are when you're confronting another person, you get defensive and your pride is affected.
Right, you also, as an audience member, you're kind of passive.
Right, and he was talking about how that sort of then makes you more open to different ideas.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
And that is kind of, and he was talking about how art does that, right? So audience members in art can sort of pretend to absorb a certain point of view and there's no great risk involved. And how that is so important to us because it gives us a chance to believe things that we wouldn't normally believe.
I know. I wonder if that's true with this particular topic because I feel like emotions are so high.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was that opera a couple of years ago, I think, that the Met stage, I forget the name, it was like a modern opera. It was a story of like, I think like this, like these PLO terrorists, I think, on a cruise ship, and they like, there was this disabled Jewish man in a wheelchair, and they like threw him overboard.
Oh,
it was
I do
like
kind
some,
of vaguely
I can't remember the name of the opera. And there was an uproar. How could the Met even stage this? It's promoting, you know, like these terrible actions, and it's giving voice for people who hadn't even seen the opera, let alone sat in the audience and tried to absorb it. So
I didn't see that opera.
I didn't see it either,
but
I remember reading
the
press around it. And it does make me wonder if this topic is unique in that way.
Yeah, your feelings. Although, it's too bad that we didn't go to that opera, because we might have walked out with a very different attitude toward it. It's hard to know.
Right.
It's hard to know what attitude it would evoke, right?
Right, right. But I just remember... I mean, I haven't been to the opera in a very long time.
So I do love the opera.
It wasn't that, I love the opera too. It wasn't that particular opera, but it was just, I don't generally, haven't been in a long time.
Yeah. So how do you think, it's not a legal censorship that's what's going on here, right? It's a kind of social constraints that people are placing on one another.
People, a lot of people say they don't feel safe talking.
Yeah.
Like, on both sides, they don't feel safe. And I understand that. You know, and we had a panel in December, I think. and a student got up, and the panelists were all Jewish, but they were talking about, they all had very different perspectives. And the student got up at the end. It was a mostly Jewish audience, unfortunately, because we really were hoping for a more diverse audience. But a Muslim student got up at the end, and he said, you know, like, I've been called a terrorist just because I'm Muslim. And it's terrible. It's terrible to hear that, you know? People, I don't remember now what you said, that maybe you told us.
How do we get the social interactions between people?
Right, and so I was very sad to hear that, because it's like, people shouldn't be calling each other names. You know, I think that's happening on both sides.
And it's happening on both sides, yeah.
It's very sad to me, because, like, talk to this guy. He seemed like a very, you know, reasonable, decent guy. Just a student.
Yeah, I think we don't quite have the...
Why should he be labeled?
Yeah.
I think also I see a lot on social media. I know it's a cesspool, but... You know, like, this policing of what you are allowed to say, what you should say, what is unacceptable to say. And I feel it even sometimes from, like, people I follow from, like, quote-unquote my side. But I don't really like the whole notion of sides. That's, like, a problem also. But let's say people whose views are mostly sympathetic to mine, but then they'll be like, well, so-and-so didn't do this, or so-and-so did say this, and... that's unacceptable. And I'll say, no, it's not unacceptable. You're allowed to have, like, people are allowed to hold that opinion without you, like, canceling them or calling them names or labeling them. You know, there's such, like, such rigidity.
Yeah, people are very eager to tell everyone else to shut up.
Yes, and, like, this is what you should do. And if you don't do what I think you should do, you're a terrible, terrible person. I know that's partly social media, but I think it also spills over into real life.
I think it's spilled over into real life. And I think that maybe what's happened to us here a little bit is that people have sort of entrenched into their own worlds, right, out of fear of those kinds of...
There's a lot of fear.
...of conflict, you know, and fear. Yeah. It's very hard. The lawyers talked about this on Friday. It's very hard for people to both... except the fact that the First Amendment exists for the purpose of protecting offensive speech, and to sort of understand that right of speech to be offensive. And at the same time, and sort of, they're sort of contradictory, at the same time to be sensitive to the fact that words can harm people and hurt people.
Right. Well, I think I mean, you know, like what you were talking about with the fist fight. I don't know if it was a fist fight or some physical violence.
It was physical, and then pepper spray got involved.
So,
somebody's nose got bloodied, and
you know, that's like someone getting hurt, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I think a lot of it is that some of this, I think I mean, I agree, people need to be able to say what they want to say, even if it offends other people.
Yeah,
like, that's really important.
I think it's really important for everybody to kind of
academic freedom and that freedom of expression.
Yeah,
but I think it is a problem when it gets to the, like, where is the tipping point that people feel unsafe?
Yeah.
Or people, you know, I mean, it's like CUNY has the Henderson rules, right?
So yes. Like, but that's in the classroom.
That's, so, well,
I thought
it's on campus.
Rule.
Because if there's, let's say, a demonstration in the hallway that's interrupting learning, that's in violation of
the
Henderson rules.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So if there's a loud demonstration on the quad, you know, and it's interrupting learning, you know, or it's creating an atmosphere where students don't feel comfortable coming to class. But then where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw the line? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I suppose something has to give on both sides, right? That's usually the way it works, right?
Right.
So people have to be encouraged a little bit to allow themselves to be offended and have others express opinions that they don't like, right? And then at the same time, encourage people to express their opinions in a way that is not mean name-calling that demonizes others,
right?
So we have to probably do both at the same time, right?
Yes.
And I guess those are messages that we have to get across to the students, because I kind of feel like that since these population of students were raised pretty much with social media, they kind of only know how to call names. I know that sounds like a terrible thing to say, but
no, it's,
I'm
it's
not so sure if they know how to express things in sort of more subtle, kind of less angry terms.
I think, you know? Also a lot of these students were raised in, not all of them, but many of the students we're talking about are maybe coming from like a more insular environment. Mm. This is not true across the board. I don't know. Maybe that's not so accurate.
No, I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. People have stayed in their own communities.
You know, right. But I think in general, like people have, you know, an affinity for others who are like them.
And, yeah.
You know, you live in the echo chamber and it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Obviously, our job as educators is to expose students to stuff that's uncomfortable. Not uncomfortable, for the sake of being uncomfortable, but just for the sake of thinking outside of your little insular.
Because often the new is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Almost by definition.
Yes.
I think that's right. Yeah. Yeah. I think you're correct, and I don't think we quite have worked out a mechanism about how to enact this. You know, what we do then do what we're paid to do, which is to do exactly what you said. To get students kind of to have a more broad perspective on the world, right? And be able to articulate different viewpoints and then know where they land a little bit better.
I think so.
I do worry that what has happened is that people just self-censored and entrenched themselves.
I think so, because it's just also, you know, it's emotionally exhausting to argue all the time.
Yeah.
I think to the point where it's like, I just want to go to my classes and do my work.
And right, and somebody else in the tent today made that point, that it's almost a psychiatric point, that because of the overwhelming amount of data that people are hit with all the time, that people just shut down. And then only want to listen to the opinions they agree with, because that takes less effort.
Yes, I think you have more customers.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, maybe we should think about some way that we can devise a listening game.
Yes.
You know, where we get people to open up to the other side.
Yeah.
But maybe we ought to also sort of let faculty know that, as a sort of general principle, that they need to put forth the message to students of being a bit more open-minded and a bit more empathetic and sensitive at the same time.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. That's...
It's a hard
thing. Easy for faculty to say.
Yeah.
It is, that's a whole other conversation. How do faculty bring this up? How do they, have these conversations in class? You know?
I was kind of thinking, and tell me what you think about this, I was kind of thinking that when we get the videotape of the two lawyers talking, because they were perfect, almost, right? That maybe we just share that with faculty. And sort of encourage faculty to share that with their students.
I think so.
You know?
Yeah.
And maybe it will ameliorate some of these feelings of being unsafe, feelings of being, you know, unheard, both things.
I think that could be good.
It's a hard situation, right?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. It's tough. It also, there was a faculty member who made this point, and I've been having conversations with people, and she made this point, she tried to bring up this topic. She did bring up the topic of, Israel and Gaza and everything that's happening, and brought up a lot of emotions with her students, because a lot of them had family on both sides, and it was very, but she said, the interesting thing is that once you start talking about these traumas, it also really triggered a lot of other students. She said, a lot of the Black women in her class were it's terrible and we're sympathetic, but, why did no one care when this was happening to Black women? You mm-hmm. know, like,
yeah.
how come, you know, why do you only care about, why do we have to have the big conversations now around this? Why can't it be around other, you know? So it's like, I feel like, you know, it's, it metastasizes almost.
Yeah, that's probably a really useful thing, though, that you kind of then point to a group and say, and what concerns do you have?
Right.
You know, I was just thinking as you were talking, I started teaching here, the week of 9/11.
Right.
That was my first week,
that's
essentially,
tough.
Right?
That's,
And then in that year afterwards, I noticed, because at that time the Muslim students mostly were men, right? And the women that were here never said a word. And so I organized the Muslim Women's Organization here at that time, right? Which still exists 20 years later over, right? You know, which is really nice. And I think it's made the Muslim women on this campus much more empowered, you know, and much more vocal. And then other people are much more aware of the issues that are surrounding that. So in some ways, that's really good that, you know, the spotlight, so to speak, right, can shift like that.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that as we kind of start to go, oh, but let's be attentive to the harm that's done someone, that then the attentiveness spills over.
Right, yes.
Right?
That is a good, it's a positive.
It's a positive.
Yes.
It's a positive, I think.
Yeah.
All right, so I thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. I think that we've got some gaming ideas.
We do.